Hello, fellow grievers. Today, if you're listening, you've reached season 2, episode 6 of the Leftover Pieces Suicide Loss Conversations podcast. And today is one of my down the rabbit hole episodes. In these episodes, I talk about things that are on my mind or topics that relate to suicide loss or grief. About a month ago, on social media, I asked if anybody had any suggestions or recommendations on things that they'd like to hear me talk about or topics that they'd like to hear me cover. And so today I'm going to speak to one of those. Today I'm going to speak specifically to telling a little bit more about my own story, a little bit more about my son, Alex. We lost Alex to suicide on August 7th of 2016. And so as I sit here with August 7th looming around the corner just weeks from now, it seems like a good time to share a little bit more about my amazing son. When Alex died, he was 21 years old. He was just about to enter his junior year at college and seemed to be doing great. Now, I will preface that by saying the last 6 months of Alex's life, he was fairly open about the fact that he was struggling some. And by struggling, I'll just say that I feel like life was catching up with him a little bit. He had been in college for 2 years. The several years prior to that in high school, he was in an advanced diploma program called International Baccalaureate. And in order to receive that degree, the course load and the amount of homework is very rigorous. And so he had come out of high school with, you know, knowing how to manage a lot of stress and anxiety to, you know, deal with a heavy course load. And then he went to a fairly rigorous academic public college. It was a small college, but it was a rigorous academic college. And in college, he also joined a fraternity and became a leader in the fraternity. But before I keep going, I'm going to actually go back a little bit to Alex as a child and what he was like growing up. He was my second child. He was born only 15 months after my daughter, Lauren. And Parker was just 2 years after Alex, so all of them were very close in age. So I raised all three of my children very much together. For those of you that have raised children, you know that they start exhibiting their personalities from very early on. And a lot of things about their personality stay very consistent as they grow older. Of course, they become older versions of those behaviors, but they retain a lot of what you see early on as they grow. And so looking back, Alex was always precocious. He was always very individual and didn't blend in really well. And I say that in a positive way. He made friends really easy and he was always very social, but he just wasn't a blend-in kid. And he always just kind of walked to the beat of his own drum. But again, I say that in such a positive way. He wasn't shy at all. He, however, did not take to change very well. I remember from a very young age, things like trying to get him to change out of his clothes for the day to get into pajamas. Didn't want anything to do with it at one point in life. I remember as a young mom, you know, fighting tooth and nail to get him out of his clothes and into pajamas. You know, as I became a more mature mom, I probably would have just let him sleep in his clothes and figured, you know, we'd change him in the morning or something. But that was kind of one of the earliest signs I saw that, like those traits I was talking about, became something that was very hallmark of Alex. He didn't adjust to change very well. But in the environments that he knew, in his daily life, whether it be school or ball teams or whatever, if it was something that he knew, once he knew it, he thrived in it. He just didn't like it to change once it was there. And unfortunately, change is a part of life. So at times that was a challenge. But he was always an outgoing kind of life of the party kind of kid. And he was, let's say if Alex was in a group, he generally tended to command the group, but not in an arrogant or boastful way. I look at it as when he was in high school, he always was the kid that came in and just would walk into the classroom or the event or walk on stage with his Harmonair singing group or onto the baseball field as a varsity baseball player. And he was the one that would say or do something that just kind of commanded everybody's attention. But it was so, I don't know how to say humble and you know, talk about that behavior, but it was not arrogant or boastful. It was in a very confident, funny way. He was just very confident in his own skin and almost to a fault. At times he would just say things like, "Mom, I don't care what anybody thinks about me." And he was so well liked in so many different arenas at school. Like he was in the technology students club and competed in technology I don't even know what they were called, competitions, I guess, or bowls, on a state level, held a state level officership in that. So he was involved in things with technology. He was a varsity baseball player all the way through high school, always played ball in the off season also. So he was an athlete. He was a glee club member, singing show choir member. Very gregarious and outgoing and had a wonderful voice. And so he kind of just fit in everywhere. He was kind and warm and funny and yet was full of this uniqueness that was just so Alex. We still call a lot of the things that he said and did Alexisms because he said things in his own way. He had phrases and sayings that were just Alex that to this day are a part of our family. He would do impressions. And one of his more common ones in high school was to do an impression of George Bush. And he would, you know, George Bush was famous for forgetting things or saying words that didn't quite fit in or whatever in some of his speeches. And I remember there would be a speech that Alex kind of gave this short version of. And at the end of it, he would just kind of have this look like, you know, George Bush would get sometimes like he had lost his train of thought, and Alex would take his hands in perfect George Bush fashion and just say, "Tacos." And I know that sounds kind of not funny. I don't put jokes together well, but it was to this day, sometimes we just look at each other in the family and go, "Tacos," because he just was so funny. And I know I touched base on the fact that he was kind-hearted, but he truly was. I remember when he was a little kid, like probably 5 or 6, and he loved animals, but he was kind of people. He was kind of people that weren't like him. He was the kid that everybody should aspire to be, in my opinion. And I remember at that age looking at one of my friends saying, you know, when he was playing on the playground and he was doing something that was just really nice. And I said, you know, he's just one of the nicest humans that I've met. And I'm just so lucky to be his mom. And that carried all the way through also. And to the point that even at Alex's memorial service that was packed with almost 600 people, we got comments written because I had a box with papers next to it that people could write memories or notes or whatever they wanted to write about Alex. And over and over and over again, people wrote or came up to me and told me that he was one of the nicest people that they knew, or that he had helped them through hard times. At least 3 of his friends credited Alex for the fact that they were still here, which added to the heartbreak for those people that he wouldn't reach out to them when he needed help. But that was also Alex. He didn't ever want to be a burden or a bother to anybody. And it was just truly from this place of not wanting to be a bother. He wasn't a martyr about it. He just, and he didn't like to ask for things. Like, he liked to be able to not put what he perceived as stress on anybody, even his parents, when we didn't ask him to do that. But I remember even in college, there were times that, you know, if he came home, I'd say, okay, let's go get you socks and underwear, or things like that. And he's like, Mom, I'll be fine. I don't really need you to do that. And there wasn't a struggle for money at this time. So I don't know where that came from, but I would just have to buy him things and give them to him. And I remember on vacation that we took to Montana only about 3 weeks before he was gone. And it was GR and I and Alex and his dog Harper and Parker, my younger son. And we drove, so we had great quality time together on that vacation for a full like 8 or 9 days. And I remember when we were in Wall Drug, which if any of you have gone across South Dakota, you know what Wall Drug is. It's this giant, massive like gift store, restaurant, semi-quasi amusement park thing that's like in the middle of nowhere. And he saw this pullover woven like hoodie thing that he wanted, and he's like, oh my gosh, I want this so bad. And he said, Mom, is there any way you would get this? And I remember almost falling over because I said, oh my gosh, yes, you're actually asking for something. I would be happy to buy that for you. And because he wanted it so badly, and he just didn't ask for things. He just didn't, unless he really, really needed it, or in this case, really, really wanted it. And he wore that long-sleeved pullover hoodie in summer, the middle of summer, because he just was so happy to have it. But going back to the idea that he didn't like to be a burden or trouble, in some ways is something that I have found out from talking to many people who have lost someone to suicide, is a very hallmark personality trait. All of these things, someone who's kind and likes to probably hide some of their feelings behind being funny and outgoing and is always there for everybody else and doesn't want to be a burden. These are the people that we have to talk to, that we have to be sure that they're okay, and that we have to say, if you're not okay, it's okay, and I'm here to listen. These are the type of people like my son Alex, that we have to continue to have these conversations for, so that we educate a new generation of people, so that we re-educate the people that are here, and so that we destigmatize mental health struggles. So picking back up where I was in talking about Alex at college, his first year there, he also had a serious girlfriend, but halfway through his second year, he and his girlfriend went separate ways, and that's always hard on both parties involved. He had gotten himself behind the eight ball with his grades and was in a program of sorts to bring his grades back up. He wasn't on probation necessarily. It was kind of like the step before that, I think. So, but he did really well that semester and had turned his grades around. But somewhere in the middle of that semester, the weight of it all really was taking a toll on him. And I remember talking to him about March, so about 6 months before he died, and that was when he said, Mom, I'm just really struggling. I think I'm going to go to see the counselor at school. And, you know, we talked a little bit about it, and he just basically cited overwhelm and anxiety, just kind of the whole, you know, he was 21, and life was getting a little bit more real, and it's not always easy. It's very hard to be a young person in today's world. And so he was just kind of citing the different things, like the breakup and the homework. He was upset that he'd let his grades go a little bit. He was having a lot of struggle with some of the members in the fraternity, especially some of the members of his own class. And when I say struggle, I mean there was some real character struggle going on within my son. He was a very, very kind human, and he had very good moral compass, And even when he wanted to join the fraternity, I remember him and my former husband, the stepdad that raised him, being surprised that Alex wanted to be in a fraternity, because from what we felt we knew of Alex, it was going to be an environment that would be very difficult for him. But he seemed he really bought into the ideals of the fraternity, the ideas of being men of character. And of course, he bought into the idea of the parties and all the fun. And I think just really wanted to be a part of a group of young men that were all doing good things. Because one of the struggles he had towards the end was telling me things like, "Mom, we're supposed to be, you know, men of character. We're supposed to be doing good things. And all they care about is these parties." And don't get me wrong, he liked the parties too, but I think he wanted the balance of it all. He wanted to be a part of something bigger and better. And yes, have a great house that had good parties, but he didn't want that to be all that mattered. And he was really clashing with some of the not so great things that some of his fraternity brothers were doing. And, you know, some of that's an episode for another day and probably another podcast. But to be honest with you, it was just a real struggle for him. And so between all of these things, he just felt overwhelmed and like he needed to talk to the counselor or something. And I was encouraging of that. I said, if that's what you feel like will help, then I definitely think that you should do that. And once he had been seen, they actually prescribed him a very common anti-anxiety, antidepressant medication called Zoloft. And it was concerning to me that they were giving it to him so quickly. I later found out that this was often the case for young adults presenting at the counseling center with signs of anxiety or depression. They just threw medication at them. And it was hard for the kids to get in to see somebody on a regular basis. And it's just kind of a broken system. But at the time, I didn't realize that. And I also had questioned my son as to whether he felt like it was helping. He did quit taking the medication after only a few weeks. He probably didn't give it a fair shot to work, although because I'm not overly pro-medication, I didn't really fight him for that. I just told him that he said it wasn't making him feel good, that he didn't like the way it made him feel. And so he quit taking it. He only took it a few weeks. And he said he was doing better by the time he came home in July. Yet, as his mom, I had like one eye on him from the time he came home. I was aware enough of mental health issues and struggles that I just had never known Alex to openly struggle. So I was wanting to be sure that he was doing okay. And as his 5 weeks home progressed, he did seem to all of us to be fine. He seemed like Alex. But I also sat him down one-on-one just the day before he went back and looked him in the eyes and said, "Okay, this is Mom, and I just need to know that you're okay. I need to know whether you feel like you still need to see the counselor." And because I knew a lot of his not being okay was tied to his struggle with where he was at college, I felt like he probably, you know, it's Mom's intuition, but I just knew he wasn't happy there. But he was the kind of kid, again, remember, he didn't like change, that I knew he was struggling with the idea of, you know, probably what he was going to perceive as bailing out, not only on the college, but on his fraternity. And so we had a very heart-to-heart talk about life and how sometimes it's not about quitting what you're doing. It's about taking another path. It's about realizing the one that you're on isn't right for you, and it's okay to make another choice. And that doesn't necessarily mean you've quit. And so he seemed very interested in that. And I'll be honest with you, I looked at my husband after Alex went home, went back to school, and said, I'm pretty sure he's going to be home within the next few months. And by that, I wasn't sure whether he would decide quickly enough to maybe not start the semester, or whether he would come home, say, at Christmas break and then just stay. But I had given him several options to think about, with going to a different college, coming home for a while and maybe going locally, and, you know, living in our downstairs, which was completely finished with a separate bedroom and entrance, and had just given him some options. And I could see the wheels turning. And again, call it mom's intuition, but I was as certain as the day was long that he just needed time to think on it, but that he was probably going to come home because of the things that he said and how he seemed interested in it. But Alex didn't arrive at decisions quickly, and he wanted it to be his decision. So when we parted ways that day, when he went back, you know, he seemed forward thinking. He told me, I cried because I'd had him home for 5 weeks, and that's what moms do. I said, I'm going to miss you. I have loved having you home. This has been, that was the longest he had been home since he had gone to college, because he was living up there full time from even his first summer. He lived, stayed in college, stayed up there and worked. So that was the longest he had been home for one length of time since he went to college. And so he said, Mom, don't cry. I'll be home in a couple weeks. I'm coming home to meet Nick's baby, which Nick was one of his best friends from high school. And everything he was saying and doing seemed forward thinking. Herein lies one of the many complications of losing someone to suicide for the people that are left behind, which is all of the unanswered questions, all of the things that we ask ourselves, all of the things we wonder about. And I'll tell you, I did my share, 100% my share, and to say I still don't do it would be a lie, but I did my share of questioning and thinking and feeling guilty and wondering what I missed. The things that I wondered about were everything from, did the divorces affect him? I divorced twice in Alex's childhood. I wondered about the concussions that he got in high school. I wondered about the fraternity culture. There's a lot of things that I wondered about. But ultimately, I'm at a place where I know that we did everything as a family. I did everything as a mother that I could have possibly done with what I knew at the time. And I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that Alex knew he was loved. I just know that he got into a dark place and in one moment made a decision that he couldn't take back. But I also know that my son had 21 amazing years on this planet. And I recently read a quote that somebody put out there, and I thought it was so inspiring. So I paraphrase. Every day, may I strive to live in the sunshine of your life and not the shadow of your death. Thank you so much for taking the time today to listen to me share about my son, Alex. It means more than I can tell you. And I hold each and every one of you and your loved one in my thoughts and in my heart today and always. Talk soon.